Hey everybody, all right, welcome to the program today. You know, I want to take a minute and say thank you to all of you. Many of you, as many of you know, I injured my foot in last week's program, unfortunately had to be canceled. And I just want to thank so many of you that reached out in Facebook and text, and those of you that, are in touch with me. You are very kind for your well wishes and your prayers. Thank you so very much. And so today, we're talking with Scott Herndon, the successful Republican candidate in last spring's primary election. Scott joins us here today as we ask about his plans, his priorities for District 1, some of the issues that have been coming up as he has traveled around the district. So we're going to get to that right after this first message.
Score a touchdown when you sign up with Ting Internet. Join Ting and you'll get a $200 service credit and free standard installation. Plus, we'll donate $50 to Sandpoint High School's athletic program. With Ting Fiber Internet, you can download, watch, play, work, stream, game, and video chat without buffering or lag, no matter how many people are online. To claim this offer and get internet as fast as a Bulldog running back, visit tinginternet.com/bulldogs. That's tinginternet.com/bulldogs.
Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet has added ReadyWise Survival and Emergency Foods to their line of food and storage supplies. They also feature preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, plus ammo and knives. And, of course, Grunberg Sloss carries U.S. and world coins, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5, located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet.
Yesterday, I traded in my Hyundai. Had a brand new car, but just for one day. I woke up this morning feeling kind of nervous. I looked outside and nearly lost my breakfast. You should have seen what the hail did to my Tundra. I slept right through the deluge and the thunder. The hailstones were the size of rutabagas. I should have kept my Tundra undercover. I stepped outside to check the damage to my paint job, and it looked like a thousand fish eyes staring right back at me.
Anderson's Auto Body.
Let's get something straight.
At the Co-op, we get the farming, ranching, gardening, off-grid, do-it-yourself, and escape to the woods lifestyles. We understand farm animals, pets, honeybees, and wildlife. In our aisles, you will find housewares, clothing, animal health, hand and power tools, yard and garden supplies, plumbing and electrical products, and more. We can help you plant a garden. We can show you how to put in a fence, run a water line, establish a pasture, and catch the rain in barrels. We can show you what you will need to fasten a dealy bob to a whatchamadinget and hang up a doohickey. Our hardware selection is impressive. And when it gets cold outside, we can help you stay warm with wood stoves, energy logs and pellets, and propane options. So when it comes to propane, farm, home, and hardware, think Co-op Gas and Supply Company. We get this rural life like no one else. Come see us. The Co-op, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, 208-263-6820.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
Hey, you guys, I am so glad that you are out there with us today, because joining us in the studio is Scott Herndon. He is the successful Republican candidate through the primary. Scott, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on this lovely rainy Tuesday, Barbara.
It is. I'm interested in how you have been preparing either for the election coming up in November and the legislative session coming up in January.
Well, mainly by identifying issues that people around here care about. And fortunately, a lot of those issues also extend to a lot of people around the state caring about them. And so I've been working with other people that are likely to win election next Tuesday. There's a lot of races that are uncontested around the state. So We have been talking to each other already to establish relationships with each other and then figure out what our legislative priorities are going to be and how we're actually strategically going to be able to get some of that done. That's the main thing.
You know, one of the questions that we were talking before we came on that's been coming up kind of in other parts of the state, a lot of the candidates are being asked about public lands, positions on disposition of public lands, how to maintain, what to do. What are your thoughts on that?
It is interesting. I've observed a lot of races around the state since I'm in touch with these other candidates. For example, Raul Labrador, our Republican nominee running for Attorney General, and a guy named David Worley, who's running for the state Senate down in Pocatello in a competitive district. He has a real shot at winning. And also Steve Fioravanti, just north of us in Boundary County, the Republican nominee for Boundary County Commissioner. I've seen these accusations against all of us, and it is that we want to sell the public lands. And so I looked into where this talking point came from, and it is an Idaho State Democratic Party talking point. I even Googled and looked back in history, and it's been used before. And I honestly don't know what the source is. 62% of Idaho, it's over 32 million acres, is owned by the federal government. That's out of 52 million total acres. If you look west of the Mississippi, the federal government only owns 5% of the state on average. So here's the situation in Idaho. So 62% is owned and managed by the federal government. There's nothing we can do about it. So it's odd that people would make a claim against people running for state office when the United States Congress is the only party that's eligible to even make any decision on this question whatsoever. However, in the Republican Party platform, we have it as an item in our platform that we want to see the state manage public land. And by the way, the state also owns a lot of public land, millions of acres, does a great job, forest timber harvesting, wildfire mitigation, which is a huge subject, and maintaining recreational access for all of us. Things that the federal government does not do, mainly because it's an unelected bureaucracy 3,000 miles away, and every time they go to do something, they get tied up in very long-term lawsuits by environmental groups. So we have it as a Republican Party platform issue that we want to have the state manage that land, and we're actually doing that successfully up in Boundary County. The Idaho Department of Lands is managing timber sales and fuels reduction on United States Forest Service land. It's working great, and that's exactly where our party stands, and I stand right there with them.
You know, the federal government is so far away. Sometimes I wonder if some of those people back there know where Idaho is and can distinguish between Idaho and Iowa. But in all seriousness, everything that gets closer to local control or state control is always more responsive and understands the situation. One of the misinformation, I guess we'll call it that as opposed to a lie, is that somehow you or some other Republicans want to sell all of this federally owned land, which A, we can't do, but B, you wouldn't do it anyway. Even if you could, you wouldn't sell all of it.
I don't see how that would be possible, number one, and we all benefit from public land. I have United States Forest Service land right behind me, right next to the Hancock Life Insurance land, right next to IDFG and IDL land. And the question just becomes in the long run, especially as Idaho's growing, is how best to manage that resource. It is a significant most of the land in Idaho. And so we need to successfully manage that resource for a growing population. And like I say, the real problem, the conundrum, is that the federal government has been stymied at the federal level. And so
by environmental groups.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for that. You know, I want to bring up another difficult issue that just keeps coming up over and over again with lots of misinformation. That's the issue of abortion. You may know that I talked to Lewis Marshall, our county prosecutor, a couple of weeks ago, and he commented, first of all, on the Dobbs decision that changed the federal position on abortion. Explain that to our audience again, because a lot of people think the Dobbs decision just basically took away abortion from everybody. I've seen things on TV that said, my women's rights have been taken away from me. and that's not true. And I'll let you speak to that.
Sure. Well, the Roe v. Wade decision starting out in 1973 and then a lot of other cases after that, the Supreme Court took the position that in the 14th Amendment, a mother had a right to terminate, I always speak very clearly, terminate her living human child. And they said that that was found in the 14th Amendment, which is an amazing thing to find in the 14th Amendment, which was passed after the Civil War in the United States and ratified in 1868. There's no right to kill in the 14th Amendment. But the Supreme Court maintained that there was a right to privacy for someone to kill in the 14th Amendment. They maintained that position for 50 years, since 1973 right up to 2022. And then this summer, miraculously, they decided to reverse themselves. And they said, which, by the way, I've always made a point that the Supreme Court is a political body just like any other body.
They're influenced.
Yeah, when obviously. You get people together, they have different ideas about how to interpret things. And they're interpreting the Constitution. And finally, we got a mix of people that interpreted it differently, which is why our government, its success is designed to because of the multiple layers of checks and balances. You never really want to put too much power into the hands of a few people because they can get it wrong.
Exactly.
So all that's actually happened, the position they now take is that the states have a right to prohibit abortion at the state level.
Or allow it for whatever reasons they want. If they want to go to a far left position, as California has always moved and moving, that's fine. But the thing that's important, Scott, is that right now, currently, after the Dobbs decision, which is the federal decision, Idaho has abortion laws that stand. Abortion can happen under certain circumstances in Idaho now.
Very limited. So
very limited.
Yeah. So what happened was is the state did, with the possibility that the Supreme Court would change its mind, put in place ahead of time the what are called trigger bans. And that trigger was if the Supreme Court changed its mind, then this thing will go into law. Now, interestingly enough, I find one slight little flaw with that because they didn't realize that their law was actually going to be law. And therefore, maybe it needed a little bit more careful writing to consider what the real world circumstances would be. That's something I expect to see in the next legislative session, especially as pertains to legitimate life-saving medical care for mothers, which Republicans are accused of not supporting. And that is absolutely not truth. We support life-saving medical care.
Yeah. I mean, currently there are affirmative defenses in our law that even in the third trimester, there can be an abortion only if the mother's life is in danger. And our current law in Idaho also addresses rape and incest, which is a very, very tiny percentage. So those things may change with if legislature wants to or not, but that's the way the law is right now in Idaho.
That is correct. Exactly.
Yeah. So the other thing I want to mention, and I'm trying to remember where I saw this, so maybe you can confirm for me that Idaho spent over $400,000 tax dollars to Planned Parenthood.
They did
so
last year.
So was that state money or federal money?
Well, it's complicated. Everything's always complicated.
All in the
I'll
pot.
Tell you exactly what it is. What happens is Idaho is a conduit for federal money. If we participate in federally mandated programs, and the best example is Medicaid, and this is actually why we are paying Planned Parenthood over $400,000 last year at a time when full abortion access was legal in Idaho. And we paid them over $400,000 because Planned Parenthood actually does provide some legitimate Medicaid services. And therefore, we are a conduit for federal money that comes into the state. It ends up in our own funds, and then we disperse those funds. And that's what that money is.
Okay. So, yeah, over $400,000 federal money. So, but it's still our tax money. I mean, it came from the American people, and it got spent on Planned Parenthood. And, of course, personally, this is me talking now, not Scott. I have a problem with that because, if they're going to spend $400,000 on an organization that does abortion, then I want them to spend $400,000 on organizations that are pro-life, and they don't do that. You know, so this is the big problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. This is the biggest problem with federal programs is they often come with requirements that we in the state of Idaho may not agree with. They may not contain our values, and that is the problem with a lot of federal programs.
The only thing I would say to that, and this may be, you know, a little bit uninformed, I apologize for that, but is that I have seen many states in other areas push back against the federal government, say, yeah, you said these strings are on here, but this isn't in our law and our constitution, you don't, and they sue, they have lawsuits, and they just push back. You know, we don't have to, you know, fall over and do everything the feds say.
My position, and this is where I hope, and I expect to see a lot of new legislators that are coming in, are going to take this basic position, that the things that the federal government does that are constitutionally authorized, so they're legitimate constitutional activities, and a great example of that would be taking care of veterans, because
exactly.
The United States is duly authorized to defend our country militarily and to take care of those who serve us through that great sacrifice. And they funnel money through the state of Idaho. We have a Department of Veterans Affairs in Idaho, and we funnel federal money. Those are always a yes. Anything that is federally constitutionally authorized is always a yes. And the ones that become subject to question are those things that the federal government is not truly authorized right. to force on the states.
They have usurped power in various ways. By the way, mention the veterans. I'll just go ahead and give everybody a quick heads up that next week, Brian Holt is going to be here. He's our local county veterans affairs officer. I think that's his title. I don't know, but he's the guy who knows everything there is to know about the new facility and the new program. So come on back next week and you can get to listen and talk with Brian Holt. All right. My next question is, and I'll give one, and that's the tax issues that people, I mean, we just don't ever get some of this stuff over the line. I'm ready for a touchdown, Scott, on this. So let's start with grocery tax. Do you agree with that? And do you think we're going to get any relief next year?
So let's use as the basis the fact that right now, after the legislature met at the beginning of September, we still have a $1.4 billion budget surplus in the current fiscal year, at least. The grocery sales tax, the sales tax on food, nets us a total of $19 million. And while if that was my household income, that would seem tremendous when compared to the total state budget of $13 to $14 billion, $19 million is not a significant portion of our budget, yet it is a significant portion of Idahoans who are trying to struggle week after week as grocery sales prices are going through the roof.
Exactly. And the argument is always we're just not going to be able to, you know, catch those tourists and make them pay more money for grocery taxes. I don't know why I think we love tourists, don't we? They bring in a tremendous amount of money to Idaho, far and above whatever food they buy. Anyway, okay, so grocery tax, you're in favor of
repealing the sales tax completely. And not sticking to the current credit system. And I'll tell you another situation this will benefit is right over here in Old Town, we have Super One on the Idaho side, Safeway on the Washington side. You go to Safeway, you don't have to pay sales tax on food. You've got to compete. Super One has to be able to compete with Safeway, and there's that additional 6% burden right away.
Of course, you have to drive to Old Town, too, with gas prices. But anyway, it's always it's
true.
A toss-up. All right, we are up against our next break. We are going to take that right now. When we come back, we have a lot more questions for Scott Herndon.
Celebrating their first year, Mountain Traders continues its quest to provide a place for North Idaho to buy and sell. Now accepting consignments of tools, equipment, and appliances for the man cave. A one-of-a-kind trading post from furniture and antiques to fresh milk and eggs with over 30 flavors of old-fashioned sodas with ice cream. There's something for everyone at Mountain Traders. Find them on Facebook or Google Mountain Traders.
The there's always time for the drive-thru deal. Because no matter how fast you are at making breakfast, McDonald's is faster.
Nothing fits your morning routine like your favorite breakfast. From a sausage McMuffin to a sausage burrito to those crisp, flaky, fluffy hash browns. Mix and match them every day with buy one, get one for a dollar. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. When you see someone sipping on a crisp, refreshing drink from McDonald's, you may suddenly crave one too. And that's normal. It's more than a drink. It's a McDonald's drink.
All your go-to drinks are here whenever that mood hits, morning, noon, or night. From a classic Coca-Cola or Diet Coke to a sparkling Sprite. Right now, get any size Mickey D's soft drink for just $1. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
P1FCU's Ascend Checking is a simple free checking account that gives you the flexibility to earn dividends. Plus, get anytime account access with online and mobile banking, mobile deposit, and no minimum balance requirements. So, level up your finances with an Ascend Checking account. Learn more at p1fcu.org/ascend. P1FCU, your community, your credit union. Insured by NCUA.
You like parties? Yeah, everybody likes parties.
You like money?
Who doesn't love money? What if we combined your love of parties with your love of money? Winner, right? Well, during November, the Kootenai Casino in Bonner's Ferry is holding a primetime Plinko party, where you can qualify during our daily hot spins to play Plinko and win cold, hard cash. And if winning money stresses you out, the spa at Kootenai is offering a 30-minute massage, express pedicure, and anti-stress facial, all three, for $99. And because November is a party month, we've got amazing midweek room specials. How about $109 for a night in the Kootenai Falls Lodge, or $129 for a Riverview room? Both come with breakfast for two. It's Plinko Party Month at the Kootenai River Casino. So get up here, join the party, and win some Plinko cash. To book your getaway, call 888-YOU-ARE-LUCKY or visit KootenairiverInn.com.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's Radio.
Hey, everybody, thanks for being with us today. We are talking with Scott Herndon, and we've just got a lot of things on our list of questions. I hope these are questions that you guys have thought of. First of all, Scott, we just talked about the grocery sales tax to get that burden off the backs of Idahoans. What about the property tax issue?
I know for a fact that there's going to be a major property tax reform bill this session. And the first thing I want to say is up front, just we should always remember that we cannot actually reduce taxes unless we reduce the cost of government. Because otherwise, yes, all we're doing is shifting the taxes from one place to another. We're shifting the tax burden. And granted, the property tax bill that I am expecting that we're going to see is going to do exactly that. And it's going to raise the homeowner's exemption. It's not going to solidify it. It's not going to put a hard dollar number. It'll have to be a relative price to, for example, median price of a home. So it'll be indexed to the median price of the home. That's going to be one minimal component of that. But and then what's that? What that it will do is shift property tax burden from primary homeowners, which I agree with, and shift it more to the commercial market and to secondary homeowners. And I know that is that bill's been drafted. It's already been run by the governor's office, and it's already been run by a lot of the stakeholders, the local taxing districts, to make sure everybody locally is going to be whole as far as their revenues.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, taking off the burden of private homeowners. This is their one home. This is their biggest investment for, I don't know what percentage. It's got to be a high percentage of people. They don't have that much money in the bank anywhere. It's all in their home. And shifting it to people who have a second home, and let that carry a much higher burden, and then the commercial, because they have a way of charging more for their product or doing things that they can recoup that money, which
they
we
pass
can't.
It through. That's what businesses do. So when we raise costs on businesses, they don't just absorb the cost, they add it to the cost of their product. And this is what I mean. It just creates a lot of shifting around.
Yeah.
But I have a great concern. for people that are on a fixed income and yes. we're in a hyperinflationary environment
right.
and they don't necessarily have the cash flow to keep up with major property tax increases. And we've got to watch out for those people.
You know, another thought on shifting the tax burden to a certain amount to the commercial sites because they can pass it on to customers. Customers have a choice. You know, you can do business with this. They're competitive with the other people in that industry or in that area. And so we have a choice. I don't have a choice with my home. That's where I live. Where am I going to live? But out here, I can choose to not shop or not buy or not do something if the price is too high for me.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
What about income tax reform? We had income tax reform for us in the last legislative session. Do you think there's more there?
Hey, I just got a check yesterday from the governor for $675, which represents my tax rebate from House Bill 1 that passed on September 1st. So the answer is that I've talked to a lot of the players. We've seen income taxes changed, I believe, three times over the last two or three sessions. We now have a flat income tax rate of 5.8%, so it's gone in the right direction. And again, all they're really doing is saying, let's take less in income tax. We're going to fund government more with sales tax. It becomes a bigger portion of the pie. And we do have the budget surplus, so we can afford to do that. Now, having seen three changes to income taxes over the last couple of sessions, I am told that we're not likely to see any changes this next legislative session. Continuing to work on income taxes, we're going to see most of the work on property tax. And if we continue to project a budget surplus, by the way, that is an opportunity for actual property tax reduction and not just shifting, because having a budget surplus simply means that we're overtaxing people.
Exactly. You know, it makes perfect sense to me. There have been a lot of moves on income tax reform and relief. And so I think, you know, let that rest for a while and let the debate move to grocery sales and certainly property tax, which I would put above grocery sales tax.
I agree. I would too.
Yeah. Let me see. What is a priority? I've listed these three things. What is on your mind for the upcoming session?
Well, I can tell you from a number of people that are coming into this legislative session, we still see a lot of work that needs to be done that came out of the COVID era, and specifically around the idea of what we are calling medical freedom. I mean, it is very unfortunate that during COVID, we actually saw coercion by the government, not by employers. The government basically put the employers over a barrel and forced them to require COVID, mRNA, emergency use authorization pharmaceutical drugs to be injected into their bodies in order to keep their jobs, which was, in my mind, unconscionable.
Yeah.
And we want to protect Idahoans from that kind of coercion. People, if there is a medical risk to taking a certain pharmaceutical, then you have to have the right of informed consent, meaning you have to know what the real risks are, and then you have to be in a position where you get to make a decision for yourself. And having the government require that and impose that on people, I think, was completely unlawful and unconscionable, and we've got to fix that. It's still not fixed in Idaho, and so it could happen again.
Definitely. And you know, the governor, I think, in all due respect to Governor Little, I think he just totally, like a Democrat, he took advantage of the situation with executive orders. He didn't call the legislature into session. He just didn't seem responsive to what the situation was in Idaho.
Yeah. It's almost like the Western Governors Association, of which Kate Brown and Gavin Newsom in California and Jay Inslee in Washington, they're all part of it, and Governor Little's part of it as well. And it's almost like they just all came to a meeting of the minds. I frequently said during COVID that Brad Little acted like Gavin Newsom light or Jay Inslee light. So it wasn't
like
quite as...
Like a little Newsom.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as offensive as the Western state governors, but it was offensive. He, for example, going back to May 2020, Idaho election laws are set in Idaho statute. There's only one body in the state authorized to change statute, and that is the Idaho legislature. Yet Governor Little literally issued an emergency proclamation, a governor's proclamation, saying that the statute currently says elections happen this way, and under my authorization, they're now going to happen a different way. The statute says this, and I now say it says that. That's not lawful.
Why wasn't he sued by... I don't know. Who would have been the prosecutors? No. Who would have sued him?
Well, you have to have standing to file a lawsuit, so I figure, I guess the legislature would have had to sue him. But we have a remedy, and I think you mentioned you probably want to talk about what's on the ballot, and there is a remedy that is on our ballots next Tuesday, November general election, November 8th, and we can fix that.
Let's talk about that now. You're talking about an amendment to the Idaho State Constitution. All of Idaho gets to vote yes or no on this amendment. First of all, explain to our audience what the amendment says.
Okay, so the amendment actually is pretty long. It's like a paragraph long, because when you change the Constitution, the amendment actually is the change to the Constitution. So to really summarize what it does, it is SJR 102, so it's identified just like that on your ballot, Idaho Constitutional Amendment SJR 102. And I will say straight up, I am a very strong yes on this amendment, and so is the Bonner County Republican Party, so is the Kootenai County Republican Party, and most Republicans in the House and the Senate voted for this. So to get on our ballot, it already cleared the legislature with a supermajority vote. All of the Republicans voted for it. Now I'm going to tell you straight up who's against it, and then I'll tell you what it contains. The people who are against it is the Idaho Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, which is a huge minority in the legislature, to a person, voted against it. And right now, the official Idaho Democratic Party is opposing SJR 102. And all of the groups that you think of as Democrats and on the left are opposing SJR 102. All the conservatives, all the Republicans, everybody in the middle and on the right is supporting SJR 102. And here's what it does. It'll fix the problems we had during COVID. We are only one of 14 out of 50 states that cannot call their own legislature into session. Well, the legislature is the only body in the state, the only group of people that can make laws and can spend money. And this was both of these things became necessary during COVID because we got a bunch of federal stimulus money from the Congress, and Governor Little spent it when he's not authorized to spend it. And then he changed laws when he's not authorized to change laws. So the Democrats are frankly lying about this, saying this is a path to becoming a full-time legislature.
I was just going to say that. They think you guys are going to call yourselves into session for, you know, 10, 12 months out of the year and get paid a lot of money.
Well, I'm going to tell you why that will definitely not happen. The salary for an Idaho senator and representative is $19,000 a year, and I have 7 children at home. I can't afford to live on $19,000 a year, so we all have jobs. And by the way, we cannot change those salaries. A citizens committee is responsible for that, and they can only get changed every 2 years, and they just met. They
this
just
is
set
why we love Idaho. Idaho's just got some great laws.
Yeah.
I want to go ahead. You had a thought.
Well, anyway, so basically what the SJR 102 will do, and so it's clear in the language of the amendment, if 60% of the Senate and the House, so you got to have 3 out of 5 members in the Senate and 3 out of 5 members of the House, have to write on a piece of paper what they want a special session for, and then they submit it to the Idaho House Speaker and the Senate Pro Tem, and within 15 days, the Pro Tem and the House Speaker have to convene a session, and the only thing you can legally do during that session is exactly what they petitioned the special session for. You can't touch any other subject.
You know, the boundaries around this are, as you said before, they're so stringent. They're so purposeful. I mean, really, even if they weren't constrained to the topic that they have named as they petitioned for the special session, thinking that the House and the Senate, that 60% can come into agreement on an issue, you know, it'd have to be big and something that is really common sense and really obvious. And it's not going to bring you guys into full session at
all. Especially considering that we're all making a living and running our businesses and things like that. So we're not just going to drop that to have a special session unless it's a critical situation of urgency.
So the Idaho Constitution SJR 102 is a big yes. It's a yes in my box, too. And it's very good because really it would have, in a way, served Governor Little because he refused to bring the legislature into session to spend money to look at some of the restrictions that he thought were important for COVID, to let the legislature handle that money and pass that legislation. It had the legislature been able to call themselves into session, they could have protected Governor Little from some of the big mistakes that he made.
They could have. This is the collaborative environment. This is why you never want to concentrate power in one person's hands, because it actually even... I say this all the time. I'll have an idea about something and I get together with the group and I figure out someone else has a better idea. Right. This is the value of a collaborative process. And when Governor Little operates on his own, we don't have the value from the collaborative process.
Exactly. I love that collaborative process that you go through, because I'll bet some of that is with Arlene, and you have your idea, then you have that discussion with her, and it changes things.
It does. I'm going to tell you another group it works with. It's the Bonner County Republican Party. There's 35 people on that committee, and I'll show up thinking I got some idea of something I want us to do. And nobody else on the committee wants to do it. I never have my way with the committee. It's their way. In other words, it's the majority of the group has their way, and usually it's a better decision. And then our role in it is try to influence everybody else.
You know, it's just important to have wise counselors and to listen to each other. All right, we are up against another break. We're going to take it. It's our last break. We've got more coming your way, so stay right there.
Hello, this is Scott.
And Ty of Albertson Barlow Insurance Services.
We have 42 years of combined experience and are very proud to provide the Sandpoint area with quality, competitive companies and exceptional service.
For all your insurance needs, whether it's life, health, home, auto, or commercial coverage, Scott and I are available to assist you in determining what coverage meets you and your family's needs.
We are located in the old Powerhouse Building, Suite 203, so come on down and see us, or check us out on the web, Albertson Barlow Insurance.
Have you tried the new Fast Lane checkout at the Sandpoint Super One Foods? There's 6 new Fastlane checkout stations, and they are super convenient and super easy to use. Check it out today, and if you're looking for a great job, Super One Foods is hiring with a variety of positions available, with some of them starting at $18 an hour. Apply today at superonefoods.net or simply stop by the store. Super One Foods in Sandpoint.
Imagine hiring a carpenter to fix a computer.
Just a little whack-a-doodle.
Or a plumber to fix your TV.
Think I found the leak.
Sometimes it's just better to start with an expert. When it comes to your car or truck transmission, get it done right the first time. Call on the specialist at Burnett's Transmission. Burnett's is absolutely the undisputed expert in transmission service and replacement. They've invested in the sophisticated equipment and certified training required to offer you affordable expert transmission repair. Cars and trucks, 4x4s and motorhomes, manual or automatic. When it comes to your transmission, turn to the specialist Burnett's Transmission on Highway 200 next to the Hoot Owl. Call them today for a free transmission performance diagnosis. 263-0589. You'll feel better knowing that the experts at Burnett's did the job. Or you could call your dentist.
Aha! Maybe if I just pull this... Oh, maybe not.
At the Co-op, we get the farming, ranching, gardening, off-grid, do-it-yourself, and escape to the woods lifestyles. We understand farm animals, pets, honeybees, and wildlife. In our aisles, you will find housewares, clothing, animal health, hand and power tools, yard and garden supplies, plumbing and electrical products, and more. We can help you plant a garden. We can show you how to put in a fence, run a water line, establish a pasture, and catch the rain in barrels. We can show you what you will need to fasten a dealy bob to a whatchamadinget and hang up a doohickey. Our hardware selection is impressive. And when it gets cold outside, we can help you stay warm with wood stoves, energy logs and pellets, and propane options. So when it comes to propane, farm, home, and hardware, think Co-op Gas and Supply Company. We get this rural life like no one else. Come see us. The Co-op, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, 208-263-6820.
North Idaho's Radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Everybody here, we are talking with Scott Herndon. We have an important election coming up in a week. Lots of people on the ballot, lots of issues for you to be thinking about. I hope you're registered, and I hope you're going to get out there and vote. So we just talked about SJR 102. That's the constitutional amendment to the Idaho Constitution that you get to say yes or no. And we're voting yes here in the studio today for sure. The next issue on the ballot is an advisory question. So it's not binding. They just want to know what we think about when the special session approved an additional 400 and some million, almost $500 million to go into public education. So are you going to say, yes, I agree, or no, I disagree?
Well, it's a trick question. And this is the thing I do not like about that advisory question. It's total politics. First of all, the H1 was passed September 1st in a special session of the legislature called by the governor, and it was his bill. And basically, they devised that language that's on the ballot was right there in the bill. It's not acting like it's an impartial question.
No.
The essence of the bill was that we're going to give you an income tax rebate. That's first part.
Right.
And that's
the
check
carrot
I got yesterday. And then the second part was we're going to lower income taxes to 5.8%, and it's going to be a flat tax. I agree with that. And then the third part is we're going to move money from this bank account to this bank account. We're not going to spend it yet. We're just going to move the money from what's called the general fund, which is where sales tax and corporate and personal income tax goes. And we're going to put it in there's two new funds for education. But we're not going to actually spend it yet. We're not allocating it for spending. That happens in the next legislative session. Well, the way it's written, though, is really, I mean, you're going to see this language on your ballot, and it's designed where you're going to say, oh, I approve of that.
Yeah, I want them.
I mean, who doesn't?
Who's going to get past the tax breaks and the reduction? They're going to say, yes, I agree with
that.
Yeah,
and so it's not going to give you a fair reading of the actual electorate where they stand on the question. The reality is my opposition is because the nature of the question is not impartial, so it's not even set up for a realistic appraisal from the people. It's like doing a poll, but it's a skewed poll because it's a leading question. That's why I personally am voting disapprove.
Yeah, I agree. And my issue is I like the tax breaks. I don't agree with allocating this much money to only public education with nothing about parental choice or any other educational venue being acknowledged and recognized. But here's what I really don't like about it and what I would hope that the legislature can deal with next year. And that is, I think there should be no laws passed that are more than one issue, single issue laws. So this is the issue. This is what we're voting on. There are no trailers and add-ons and other things that are happening over here that muddy the water. So what do you think about that?
Well, guess what? That's already in our Idaho Constitution. And this is why people think, when they think of the United States,
it's already there, but
in
they're
the
not
Constitution,
doing it.
Single subject bills. That's all we can have. And that's why people, when they make an excuse for legislators and they say, hey, this legislator voted yes on that, but it's really because there were 5,000 things in the bill that he liked and two he didn't like.
Right.
That's not true. Most of our bills in Idaho are one page, most of them, or a few pages at most, and they're single subjects.
How did House 1 then get passed?
I'll tell you the trick. How did it get through?
How did they get
the way
that?
It got through?
Oh, my goodness.
Is the attorney general said, oh no, this doesn't violate the single subject rule because even though we're moving money from this account, see, if we reduce taxes, that's one bill. If we appropriate money, which means we actually authorize the spending of the money, that's a different bill. They did not appropriate the money. They only moved it from one account to the next account. And here's the key. This is not only going to happen one time. It happens every single year. It obligates the legislature to take $410 million from the general fund and put it in these new special education funds. Now, granted, it doesn't mean that we're going to raise spending on education, so it doesn't lock the legislature into that, but it certainly seems to suggest that's what we're going to do, and it obligates us forever. Yeah. Unless this law changes again. And so that's a problem to commit future legislatures to a commitment to a certain spending level when we have no idea what revenues are going to be in those years.
I am happy to know we have single issue law, and I'm stunned. Lawrence Wasdin, our AG, right? He's the one that found that loophole. That just really irritates me.
It's pretty tricky.
Yeah.
This one was tricky.
I hate that kind of thinking. Politics has got enough problems without, you know, revealing that. The other thing that I don't like about this House 1 slam dunk that took one day for everybody to go down there and vote yes on, and that is that they took away my vote. They disenfranchised me on Prop 1 because this very issue was going to be on the ballot, Prop 1, and then I had the power to say yes or no, not advisory, but to actually do it. And I think, now again, everybody listen to me. This is Barbara. This is not Scott saying this, okay? He's got the look of a doe right now in a headlight. Like, what is she going to say? But I think that Governor Little and the people who were in favor of all this thought it was going down. It was an unpopular Prop 1, did not look like it had a lot of momentum behind it. Everybody was like, what? And I think it was going to be defeated. So they did the special session and they just pushed it through. They disenfranchised me, Scott.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I guess we'll leave listeners with this. Your vote on this Idaho advisory question that's on your ballot literally has no impact whatsoever.
Impact.
The deed's already been done by the legislature on September 1st. So
exactly.
You can leave it blank if you want, but
it's not going to change anything.
It's not going to change anything. And I will tell you, I'll say this. The Idaho legislature is constitutionally authorized and has the duty to fund a system of free common public schools.
Correct.
And we will do that. And the question then becomes how best to do that. That's the only thing ever in question every year. I do expect to see some legislation on that subject in the next legislative session.
All right. I look forward to hearing about that. Third thing, we've got time just to squeeze this in. I know you don't live in the city, but what do you think about doubling the lodging tax?
Yeah, it's
for the
bed
city
tax. Any occupancy 30
tax.
Days or less. So we'll
14%.
Just simplify it as the bed tax, hotel tax, Airbnbs. And it depends on how much you like the projects the city of Sandpoint wants to use the money for. So they're basically bringing in this money. They have very specific projects that they want to pay for. This is the thing. If we have government do stuff for us, then they're going to have to tax people in order to provide the funding. That's their revenues are taxes paid by either all of us or people in this case who are going to be staying in the city of Sandpoint for 30 days or less. And they're right now that bed tax is at 7%. It's going to double. And it's going to double for a period of time into the future. And then if you're generally against increasing taxes, if you instead think that there's room to cut areas of spending in Sandpoint and reallocate money and shift money in the budget, then that you should probably be a no on this one and ask City of Sandpoint to be better with the budget they already have. So it just depends on how well you know the city's budget, how well they use their money, and whether you want to see a doubling of the bed tax on people staying here temporarily.
You know, the only thing that concerns me, because I don't know a lot about the city budget in the detail that is necessary to answer those questions that you asked, but I think a lot of people vote yes because they just want to, well, let's just hammer the tourist. But this could be your mother-in-law, you know, staying at the hotel. All right, we are completely out of time. Thank you for being with us today, Scott. All the best to you.
My pleasure.
All right. That's the program for today. Next week, as I told you before, we're talking with our local county Veterans Affairs Officer, Brian Holt. He's going to talk to us about the new Veteran Services Building and a couple of new programs and also the celebrations coming for Veterans Day. So you don't want to miss it a lot. lot of good information. Until then, this is Barbara saying, please take care and may God richly bless you, my friends.